Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Gregory Melville and Susan Fox and Kathleen Bromage.
Faith here with your welcome toast. You can't buy happiness, but you can buy cupcakes, and that's kind of the same thing.
I got that sunshine in my pocket, got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops.
It's great to have you joining the party on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze, inviting you to eat, drink, and be merry with us. We're in our new culinary studio at the Big G, that's what I call it, Gateway Community College in downtown New Haven. It's a massive place in the middle of the city, and we have five culinary kitchens to choose from here on the Food Schmooze. You know why this was important when I said eat, drink, and be merry with us? Because what we're going to talk about on the show today is so exciting to me, and it's about this philosophy called hygge. I'm going to explain that in just a minute, but my treasured food buddies are here. Senior contributors Chris Prosperi, Alex Province, Mark Raymond, you know Robin Doyen Aiken is here. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
Right, let me just explain to you that for the past few years, there is what I would call is a celebration of something important from Danish culture, and it is a philosophy and a way of living called hygge. Some people say hygge, but hygge we'll say. So a few books have come out about this, and I think I have the best of the batch, and we have the authors on the show with us. The hygge philosophy is the word translated into the closest we can come in English would be a coziness. I think a kind of intimacy with other people, you know, arms around you kind of feeling. But the best way it's explained is in the opening to the book. And it says, Scandinavian winter is a long and frosty affair. It requires fierce resolve to brave the angry winds that gust inland from the ocean, to enjoy a few pale hours of sun before it slips beneath the horizon once more, to thrive in spite of adversity. That sounds like our world today, right? But it's more than a courageous heart and thick woolen socks that see Scandinavians joyfully through the dark, bleak season. Their spirits are enriched and hearts made buoyant by the concept of hygge. It's their winter elixir. It's the notion that taking care of yourself and those you love fortifies you with an invincible sense of well-being that no amount of snow or endless twilight can temper. Loosely translated, the word hygge means coziness. But for Scandinavians, it means more than creating a warm and inviting space to live. It's about feeling cozy from the inside out and letting this sense of utter contentment permeate everything you encounter throughout the day, gloomy and gray as it might be. The word originated in Denmark, but the concept is fundamental to how all Scandinavian people live every day of the year. It's a concept that feels just right during the winter, but one they also carry into warmer months when they spend long summer days hiking in forests and invite friends round for outdoor barbecues under a midnight sun. So, hygge is about creating a sanctuary of warmth and coziness that acts as a refuge for you and everyone you love. Inviting comforting elements into your day-to-day life is the essence of hygge. Grace, simplicity, and gratitude are the principles hygge practitioners adhere to for an abiding sense of well-being. Drinking hot, spiced wine while wrapped in blankets by a glowing fire is hygge. A candlelit meal of warm comfort food with friends is hygge. A summer festival celebrating the longest day of the year with blazing campfires and live music is hygge. Wool socks, aromatic tea, a good read at a cabin, all hygge. A bakery with freshly baked bread is hygge. Bikes are more hygge than cars. Fluorescent lights are never hygge. Listen to that, office buildings. Relaxing on the couch with a birch schnapps cocktail, your feet kept toasty, nestled in the fur of a loving dog, is hygge. So, you see what I'm getting
at? Beautiful.
This whole book, here we have the authors of The Hygge Life, and it's spelled H-Y-G-G-E. And here are the guests who created this book. Gunnar Carl Gislason is chef of the award-winning Dill restaurant in Reykjavik, the Nordic House. That's where his restaurant is. But he also has a place, Agurn, and Grand Central Terminal. So he's celebrating the Iceland thing, and cool. It's become quite a thing all over. And we have Jody Eddy, who is the author of several books, is a graduate of the Institute of Culinary Education in Manhattan. So, welcome to the Food Schmooze Party.
Thank you very much.
Good to be here.
We want to be hygge with you. Okay. Is this possible for those of us who live in the United States who aren't supported in the way that Danes are by the government? Our life is very different from yours. You have higher taxes, yet you have health care, and it's child care and family leave and all these things. And so you are free to not be so scared about the things that frighten us. How do we embrace hygge?
I think it's like it's more about appreciating the small things. It doesn't really always have to be about like the grand picture, I guess. My son very often he says that he's having the best day of his life, and he happens to have that day very often. I've kind of like started to think like that's kind of like the spirit and how we should live. So I'm having the best day of my life over and over again now.
You know, the way that meditation is a habit and that you start to embrace it as a habit, you do it every day, you do the same thing of watching your mind without judgment, that's the whole thing. You learn over time to be better and better at it. I'm wondering if hygge isn't like that. For instance, Jody, you are from here. And yet you're part of this whole thing. Do you get what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I've traveled to Iceland several times. Every time I return from Iceland, I just take more and more of Iceland and its sensibility with me and incorporate it into my life in every way. And I think what Gunnar was saying about it really needs to begin from an internal place. It's not as much about your external environment. It has to begin from the inside. And I think it can be applied anywhere in the world. I think as we travel, we meet people all the time who really embody the spirit of this concept everywhere in the world. It's about loving the people in your life, taking care of them, taking care of yourself, and that can be applied anywhere.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if you see why something like this would start in Scandinavia, because there is so much darkness and so much cold, and that in itself is depressing, technically. So the people of that place, maybe this happens in Scotland too, and we have just, you know, there's a lot of intermingling between the Scots and the Danes. You know,
what do you mean?
you would find that you would have to come up with something where you trained your brain to embrace a positive, wholesome spirit. And I think that's where this started. And now we all want the same thing. I mean, I think we're reading this and thinking, is this true? Is this, you know, how do we get this? You know, we don't have the darkness, but we certainly have the stress. And I was so taken with reading your book and the recipes and very inspired by it.
I've known Gunnar for about a decade now. I often in life, and I don't know if you know this, Gunnar, but I often think, what would Gunnar do? How would he approach the stress I'm encountering right now? Because he really has a levity of spirit, and I feel like he really embodies hygge. The first time I was in Iceland in the winter, it really does affect you in a profound way. But I noticed that my Icelandic friends were not affected by it in a negative way. They really took it for what it is, and they found solutions, I think, environmentally and psychologically and spiritually.
And there is something about these recipes that you have in here. And thank you, by the way, for allowing us to put some of these recipes on our website, foodschmooze.org, where you will find out information about this book and see some of the recipes from the book. So how do we describe how you create a sense of hygge with food and drink?
I think it has a lot to do with kind of like cooking some simple plates and try to make sure that it doesn't get too complicated and you can have like a relaxing and good time while you do it, right?
Yes, so people sometimes cook together. You know, you said Scandinavians love pizza as much as anybody in the world, and the idea is to...
Even more, probably.
Yeah.
He has a pizza place in Reykjavik.
Oh, really? Oh.
Do you guys deliver?
I'm dying to go there. Okay.
There you go.
Let's start with one of the recipes we have on the site that's in your book, fennel salad with blue cheese and walnuts.
Yum.
Oh, yes. This is great for lunch with friends. It comes together in a few minutes. You certainly could use it as a side salad at a dinner on any night or a brunch dish, but it has those elements in it. I see, Gunnar, that you are into texture as much as you are into flavor. Everything has got some kind of texture going on.
For me, like when you're eating something, I mean, obviously you want everything to taste delicious and you want all the different flavors to go very well together. But as well, for me, it's very important that you have different kind of textures. You have to have something smooth. You have to have something crispy and et cetera. So that's like kind of like what makes the perfect plate, right? Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So there's fennel bulb sliced up and apple cider vinegar and salt and pepper, the chopped walnuts, a little tiny bit of butter, some sourdough bread, salad greens, a wedge of blue cheese, some sliced radishes. If you have them, edible flower blossoms for a garnish, that's optional, of course. And it all comes together easily, but it's fresh, it's real, and delicious flavors together, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely delicious. It's like an intentionality to it. Even like the setting, I look at the picture, it's so pretty. Like everything has a purpose.
So may I say to the two of you, because we asked Chris if he would make one of your recipes, and so he made the bratwurst, or maybe I should say bratwurst, with sauerkraut and smashed potatoes. Talk about hygge. Oh. Talk about comforting and
clean
cozy
plates
with each other. Oh. Yeah.
Chris, you loved it too. You loved it, loved it.
Wow. This is on our website too, fuchmoose.org. Go ahead. It's in the book.
Yeah, when I feel good and I come from a place of just feeling like happy and in a good place,
it transfers
into the food almost. Mm. That happiness, that joy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's always going to transform into the food, right?
Let me bring Jody in on this because, Jody, you went to cooking school, and I think that they would do well to teach that at cooking school. That's not something that they talk about. It's more toward yes chef, no chef, and a rigorousness. What do you think?
Absolutely. And I think another thing that I've always admired about Gunnar's cooking is that I've really learned from him that something simple can be as incredible as something that's really complex to prepare. We're kind of trained in this high-end culinary world that if it's gorgeous, that's what counts. But I think Gunnar, his food is gorgeous, but it's also so incredibly flavorful. Mm. And I think that's a good lesson for chefs to embrace.
For home cooks, how does that translate? Are we talking about the presence of fresh, whole foods without a lot of junk in it? What does this come from? This powerful flavor, addressing texture. Home cooks aren't standing around doing that. You know, we're trying so hard to get food on the table. So how do we get at this?
I think the simplicity comes from that happiness place. I have made
happiness
some
means no rushing.
Yes, and I've
like enjoying the process.
And I've come up with some of the most amazing dishes on Sunday afternoons at a friend's house while her daughter is singing in the background, and the two of us are cooking together. And because we're doing it together and in that place, hygge, right?
Yeah.
Like Gunnar said, it translates into the food somehow, like, so and it's hard to put into words.
Like dinner's not like a box to check off, like dinner, done.
Maybe hygge, is we saying that in America it's for weekends? Or are we saying this is a thing that you learn as a habit to calm down?
That's
it.
Yeah. That's it.
Come
Gunnar
home,
said it.
Enjoy
his son had
dinner,
the best day.
The
right, Gunnar, right?
He had the best day of his life.
Right,
his
Gunnar? Yeah. It could be the stressful day. But you're home cooking with your wife and your child. All of a sudden, you can put yourself in that place, can't you? Gunnar, how do you do it? You own a restaurant. How do you get to that place?
Well, maybe it's just because I'm so careless.
Maybe.
Carefree.
That's
carefree.
A lesson we need.
I broke it.
You just need to be more careless. No. But in all seriousness, several years ago, I was about to die of stress and too much work and all that. So we were making like a new web page, and the only thing we had there was pictures. Then I opened it up. The first text that I saw that was like kind of like on the opening page was by this great poet in Iceland, and it pretty much said that this will all go or end somehow, even though we don't really think so. That's kind of like been my motto. You wake up one day and you think it's going to be a tough one. Like at the end of the day, it's going to end.
Yeah. At the same time every day, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. It's kind of a relief.
We don't have
right?
control over all that. Life goes on.
Exactly.
And
this too shall pass. Yeah.
So worrying about stuff that you have no control over, what's the point of worrying, right? It's going to happen.
If it's
going to happen, it's going to happen. So enjoy. Look around. Find the beauty in everything around us. I mean, that's at least you have control in that.
Mm.
This is wonderful to maybe knock some sense into us, you know, to get us out of that track, that wheel that we get on. Mm-hmm. In our lives, that's just where you're just spinning, going round and round. Those voices in your head are, you know, talking like crazy, and you're in that loop.
Maybe you can tell those voices, Hugo. Yeah.
Yes.
What people would give to be healthy and happy to have today.
So I want to call your attention to what's in the book, the pancakes with berries and whipped cream, the rice porridge for breakfast. These were ones that just had me running to the kitchen, fried fish with almonds and capers, the recipes we have on our site, foodschmooze.org, how to have a movie night, stovetop popcorn from Gunnar, how to give your guests a parting gift as they go out the door.
Oh.
A Huga pizza party, and on and on it goes. I adore this book.
Me too.
And this philosophy, it's very inspiring to me. So Jody Eddy and Gunnar Carl Gislason, thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, thank you much more.
This is the best day of my life. Okay. And don't forget, people, it's spelled, The Higgy Life is the name of the book, and it's spelled H-Y-G-G-E, but you pronounce it in the language Huga. You know, H-O-O-G-U-H, Huga, like that.
Gunnar, will you pronounce it for them, just as a nice parting gift?
Well, I would say you did it very well.
Oh, no. All right, come on, Gunnar.
Let's go, Gunnar.
Help me do it exactly right.
Huga.
Oh.
Sounds the same.
Huga.
Huga.
Yeah.
Right?
Or like we would say in Icelandic, hyggulega líf.
Oh,
yes,
that's it?
That too.
Oh, I'll practice that.
Hyggulega líf.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Coming up, we're going to talk about what are our comfort foods and what are yours, by the way, as you can think about this. We're going to take a short break. And also in this segment after that, we've got a great white wine discovery for you. It's an Italian white, Suave. You might have seen that on old school Italian restaurants. Well, you know, it's back and it's delicious, it turns out. More mouthwatering conversation and fun ahead on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze here at Gateway in New Haven. I hope you'll make a charitable contribution to feed the hungry. We're online now at foodschmooze.org, and we'll be right back.
Cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight. Beans. Cornbread said, now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night. I'll be ready tomorrow night. That's what Beans said to Cornbread.
I'm Faith Middleton with my treasured food buddies, and you know I mean that. Chris Presberry, chef and co-owner of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut. Wine broker Alex Provence and wine broker Mark Raymond. They're all our senior contributors. Senior producer Robin Doyen Aiken is here. And we have just been celebrating the Danish philosophy called hygge. And very much like mindfulness, I think, really, when you come down to it. But this guy has got some great recipes in that book and allowed us to take several of them and put them on the website at foodschmooze.org. So we're thrilled
Very
about
cool.
that. I can't wait to start cooking and to calm down when I do it. And you know what else I wish I'd gotten to say to him? The part in the book that I love, in addition to his recipes, is the sense that you can cook with friends and that when people come over, you don't have to pretend that you are a five-star restaurant.
Nope. No.
You just are pulling things together.
Yeah.
And then
do all the work ahead of time. Do nothing when your guests are there.
The time together is the point. And
yes.
the never mind all the many
the food
courses.
Makes
or I think Faith is even saying, like, just enjoy the pro. When they're there, just have a who cares?
Keep it
simple. Make a bowl of spaghetti.
Oh, whatever.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. I always go to the artists who used to do this. You know, that's all
they
could afford.
Yeah. With spaghetti.
Pot of spaghetti.
Yeah.
A Chianti in the basket.
Yeah.
A couple bottles.
Nothing wrong with that.
Build a fire.
Supermarket bread on the table and some butter. And maybe you thought to take the butter out before they got there. And a jug of wine.
Yeah.
And, you know, there you go. No one's going, you just...
They're all props to life.
Built for the fun.
Right?
Exactly.
It's all a prop to life.
Exactly. I love that you say that. Okay. So let's do our version of comfort foods. Because really, if this hygge philosophy is about comfort and coziness with other people, what foods? You know, if you look at Gunnar's recipe, you can hear that these are whole, clean foods that are just fresh and, you know, they're delicious. And
they
he's a chef. He has to pay attention to various things. But these recipes, anybody can follow, right?
The one that's my go-to now is basically the simplest recipe on earth, but it is so hygge. That hygge. It fits it perfectly. And it comes from Linda Juca, and it's pastina. It's so simple. It's not even a recipe.
I love everything that Linda makes.
Yeah. And this is from her grandmother, and she fed it to her kids. So you just cook up some pasta, little pasta, like the ditalinis or little stars, whatever you want, with salted water, right? Cook it till it's nice and soft, and then drain it. Leave a little bit of water in the pot. Put the pasta back in the pot. Mix in a tablespoon or so of butter and three slices or four slices of American cheese. I know it sounds crazy. Stir all that in.
Do you chop it up?
No, just drop the slices right in. It just melts right in. Right? And then you're still kind of it's on the burner, but not really cooking,
but
right?
But are they cheese?
Oh, yeah, but it doesn't
matter.
Does
it melt?
Yeah,
it melts.
So it melts so beautifully. And then you take an egg. Crack an egg, you whisk it, and you mix it in there off the fire while it's still hot. And then you don't even have to put it in a bowl.
What?
Just take,
you crack an egg?
Yeah, and whip it up, and then you fold the egg in, and it cooks it. The egg cooks in the warm pasta with the cheese.
You mean it scrambles?
Becomes
Turns
the sauce.
Into cream.
So
well,
you
yeah.
just made a carbonara.
Yeah but
well.
It's so, but that's but it's carbonara is not hygge.
The cheaty way.
Pastina
no,
is
I love.
Right, because it's just so simple.
With
and like
or without
I said,
gluten.
You take the bowl, you take the pot to the couch with you, and you just eat it right out of the pot, and just like it's a blanket that covers you.
That's good. Try it because
it really is.
All right.
So simple.
Who's,
and so yummy.
Who's up next? And Robin, don't think you're getting out of this.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
I think my hygge would probably be Sunday sauce. It's the tomato gravy that
like
your
Sunday
grandmother
gravy?
Made, you know?
Yeah.
My nanny called it gravy, but, you know, it's tomato sauce. And in the heartier winter months, you add a little bit of maybe sausage or meatballs or maybe some lamb chops and braise them in the pan before you start the sauce. And then garlic and your onions.
Braise them in the pot you're using for the sauce,
Absolutely.
Oh,
yeah, because you want all those drippings right into the sauce, and it just makes it a richer, heartier sauce.
Yeah. Oh,
and
my
then you cook
God.
Up whatever your favorite pasta is. Is it gemelli? Is it ziti? Is it the
Just spaghetti.
Or just regular spaghetti, yeah. You know, a nice crusty loaf of bread on the side. Everybody gathers around the bowl.
Oh,
and we pour out a little bowl.
Simple Chianti.
Yeah, a nice, easy, simple red wine.
Malbec.
Or whatever you like to drink.
Yeah. Maybe you're doing one of those non-alcoholic shrubs or whatever.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. Robin, how about you?
Well, my most hygge meal is really a shepherd's pie.
Mm.
Yeah, I grew up with it. My aunt used to make it. We didn't call it shepherd's pie, but it is really what most people think of as shepherd's pie, you know, like the mashed potatoes with not lamb, but I have beef in mine, and peas and corn.
Yeah.
That's my favorite. We called it, this could be either from my Canadian side or my aunt's Polish side, but we called it petit chinois. I don't know why, but that's the name of it.
I like it.
I couldn't spell it for you, but that was our version of shepherd's pie.
Nice.
Does it have crust?
Well,
or no?
Well, if you're baking it kind of in a casserole dish in the oven, and the top is a mashed potato layer, and so that will get a little
crispy.
golden brown.
So you don't really need the crust.
No, but then I put a little melted butter on top just to finish it and put it in the oven again.
Yes.
And that's what makes it golden.
Parmesan
we
cheese,
all
maybe.
Like to finish
more butter,
our,
more better.
We like to finish our food with a little butter.
Yeah.
This is what we do. Mm. Well, and that can calm you down right there.
Oh, yeah. Just
the butter.
I'm so relaxed right now just thinking about it.
Here's Robin, I'm so glad you brought that up because I just saw, and I'm trying to, my mind is racing with where did I see this idea of taking puff pastry, the frozen kind you get in the supermarket, you know, taking a square of it and defrosting it and then mixing up a bunch of wild mushrooms that have been cooked in butter, some frozen peas, maybe some shallots or something. You could add your corn. And then taking a couple spoonfuls and putting it on top of the center of the puff pastry, folding it over, and then pinching the sides so that it's a triangle, like a
almost like an empanada.
Turnover.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Turnover is like an empanada.
Yeah, yeah.
Turnover. And then take a little egg and brush it and pop those in the oven, and they're like.
Like a Hot Pocket.
It's like.
Like a Hot Pocket,
like
but
a hot pocket,
without
but
being.
And a fancy Hot Pocket.
A homemade Hot Pocket.
Yeah, I like it. And so, the crust is soft and crispy
at the
same time.
But I think the key is also what Robin's talking about. There's something about the flavors, the heat, the carbs, the mixture, the smell in the room, the oven heat coming off the oven. You know, I mean, it's just fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Alex Robbins, what do you have for comfort food?
So carbohydrates are like comfort food for me. So I love Jacques Pepin's way of using all the cheeses in my refrigerator. So I will make like a simple melt some butter in a heavy bottom stock pan, add a little flour to that so it's a roux, add some milk until it thickens up. And then I go into my cheese drawer and find like the strong cheddars that we love on hamburgers and Parmesan cheese, American slices, the little, but I do the organic ones,
okay,
you know,
fine.
They're good.
And wait a minute, no Manchego?
Manchego? I ate all the Manchego.
Oh, all right.
Manchego got eaten.
I was going to say, you've got to have Manchego.
Maybe even a little blue cheese.
What's in there? What are you doing with all that?
I'm going to grate them on a box grater and then I'm going to dump them into my bechamel, you know, that like creamy, milky, buttery white sauce. I'm going to add a little salt and pepper, maybe a little nutmeg, a little spoonful of Dijon mustard. And then meanwhile, going to boil some elbow macaroni.
Oh.
And I'm going to drain them and combine them. And then maybe I'll eat it right out of the bowl or I'll pour it into a buttered casserole.
You mean you might share?
I'll share with myself. I'll share with Matt. No, I will. I share.
That's not hygge.
That's not hygge. That's self-indulgence.
Sharing is the most important part.
No, this is more that it can eat. I'll share.
The Danish people do not like that individuality thing. You know?
That's mooga.
That's a different one.
Okay. So I, you know, this is crazy, and it's not even a meal, but it's, you know, that thing where you stick me on an island and you can have one food for the rest of your life, and I think, pretty much it's a grilled cheese sandwich.
Ooh,
yeah.
No.
You know, the bread, so if you stick me there, just give me a pan,
Some butter.
A life supply of butter.
And, do you do sourdough or white bread? Or?
Yeah, I mean, mostly I like white bread.
Yeah. Like hearty white. Yeah.
Because I like the, to get
Does
it really
Wonder Bread white?
Wonder
buttery
bread white.
Golden on both
crispy,
sides.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes I might like to have different kinds of cheeses, but basically that sharp,
cheddar.
Delicious, maybe English cheddar. Some of the cheddars that right here in Connecticut that are
Cato Corner cheese,
I mean, but as long as it's sharp and
got a little tang,
just you know, flipping over in the pan so the
butter
that it's
and
golden
the
and buttery.
Cabot does the crispy one in the plaid.
Yeah,
like the,
that's a good one too.
Hunters or whatever.
That's New Orleans cheese.
Yeah, cloth wrapped cheese. Well, anyway, so that's my comfort food, and I really don't see why you couldn't make that for people coming over. You know, grilled cheese night.
Yeah.
Please come. Who would turn down that invitation?
Nobody.
I'm having a grilled cheese party.
Yeah, and the panini
baker. I have a paintbrush with melted butter, and I just brush on the panini grill, right? And then you just drop them in one at a time or two at a time and pass them out, and people are having grilled cheese. And then you can put anything you can put anything you want in it. You could put asparagus in it. You could put chicken in it, whatever, tomato, avocado. Mm. And then it's the simplest thing, and no one fusses.
What we've got in common here is we have certain ideas about what comfort food is. So their focus would be on, they have maybe some other ideas, there's an overlap, but they're focusing on keep it simple and do things that are convivial, that bring
fellowship.
People together.
Yeah.
Hear the laughter, hear the kids, hear the, you know, watch
make your
movie,
own grilled cheese.
Make
your own grilled cheese.
And why procrastinate? Do it tonight. I mean, why does everything have to be so, like, planned out? Just call a few friends. If they can't, invite some other people.
Yeah.
Just do it.
You have any cheese?
Take that lesson.
Bring your own cheese.
Yeah. Come over tonight.
when they say, hey, what can I bring? Bring a cheese.
Yeah.
Bring Wonder Bread.
Don't worry. I got the bread. You bring the cheese.
I got the wine.
Or vice versa.
Yeah.
I got the mozz.
That way the gluten-free
everyone brings everyone brings one item, right? Yeah, someone brings the bread. Someone brings the cheese. Everyone else brings a filling, a
truth
tomato,
is people
an
are happy to be together.
Yeah, that's the most important part.
That's it. So this book is about taking care of yourself and not feeling guilty about that. This has become, we've pathologized that. Yeah. And to take care of other people. That's the whole ball game right there.
And it's easier to take care of other people when you take care of yourself first.
Yes.
Don't you think?
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no question.
It's like air masks in planes.
Yeah. Heard
that's
the chef
the thing.
And Gunnar, Carl Gislas, and you heard him say that he too, a man from the culture of Huga, he too was stressed out of his mind and then read that sentence
that
from
poem.
The poet.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Though you're not realizing it, this time will be over.
Yeah.
And so you have now, and there you go. So
agreed.
I think that's what they're getting us to acknowledge, but in a really nice way.
Yeah. Yeah, really
maybe
nice.
Maybe we need that.
All right. We have a what we would call a Huga wine for you that will bring people together, and I think you're going to enjoy this. It's kind of a good discovery. It's an Italian wine. Just under $20, and it's an old Italian grapey kind of thing. It was an old school menu. You'll see. This is going to be good.
Be fun with fun with a grilled cheese sandwich.
I know. Yes, it would. All right. We love the local, and we ask you to support your local food growers and food makers. You know our podcast. Just sign up for it at foodschmooze.org. Wine's coming up. We'll be right back.
Moments live
This is the Food Schmooze Party, offering the richness of life and coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York. New York, including Westchester County, the East End of Long Island, the Hamptons, of course. The senior producer is Robin Doyen Aiken. And to hear this show on WNPR, it airs Thursdays at 3 and 9 and Saturdays at noon. I am with Chris Prosperi, Mark Raymond, Alex Provins. Robin, of course, is in the engineering room and joins us from time to time. And this wine is a great find, I think. And it is around $19, $20 a bottle. You know, some brave stores are going to charge $18 just to get your business. But anyway, let's say $18 to $20. And it's from Italy, and it's a wine that you still see on the menus of Italian restaurants, right?
Cool,
suave.
Right? Yeah.
Suave.
Suave.
Suave. Suave Classico. You know how you see that? Well, this is made by a vineyard called Pierrapan. What do we know about this grape, Alex?
The first thing we notice when we poured it, it's so straw yellow. The color just jumps out at you.
It's a different color, right?
It's like very bright yellow.
It is crisp and fresh, and yet there's a structure in here, a little roundness in the mouthfeel.
Yeah.
So
kind of like a Chardonnay, right? It's round
like
in a way.
Like a very dry Chardonnay.
Yeah, very dry Chardonnay.
It smells a little different, but the mouthfeel is like a Chardonnay.
Yeah, stainless steel, right?
If you had to make a cross between Sauvignon Blanc and Chardonnay, this might be it.
This might be
the child.
There
the
you
child
go.
Of
the
Sauvignon
baby.
Blanc.
The baby.
Okay. Without the grapefruit.
Without the grapefruit.
Without the...
But a little lemon, a little
apple.
Citrusy.
Yeah.
You know what was neat about Suave? Oh, in the 70s and 80s, it was incredibly popular in this country, more so even than Pinot Grigio.
Yeah, it was one of the six wines you got in a restaurant in the 70s.
So I think Pinot Grigio came and sort of ate its lunch, so to speak.
So let's go back to this. I like it. So,
Chris, wasn't this your nickname in high school? Suave?
Rocco Suave.
So what part of Italy is this from?
Northeast. So in Venice, the Veneto region.
The Veneto.
Mm-hmm. Their cuisine is like rice-based and seafood and all that beautiful stuff.
So you see where it comes from, right?
Yeah, it would be fun to do like a Boreo rice, like a risotto with this, mushrooms or scallops.
Yeah, asparagus.
Ooh, asparagus risotto with this would be fantastic.
So you know how scallops often demand, because you cook them in a little bit of butter, they often demand something with a little butter in it. And now, is this too dry for scallops?
No. I think this is perfect.
I think this would be delicious.
I think this is what Europeans would do, whereas here in America, when we're having lobster, we're going for buttery stuff.
Yeah.
Because we think of seafood plus butter. Now I need to match with butter, and it's not necessarily that
sometimes
way.
It's better to do the opposite, right, when you're drinking wine, to not go
cut
with
the butter.
Yeah, direct opposite of the butter.
The acidity cuts right through.
Yeah, and then you want another bite, so it sort of washes away that fatty butter taste in your mouth.
Yeah, like
and then you're ready for another bite.
With like lobster, you dip it in butter, but you can also take a squeeze of lemon.
Yeah.
And this one is
and
that
this is
squeeze,
the squeeze
of lemon.
Good idea. Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Faith makes an interesting point. European wines, like this wine, is drier than what someone who's drinking American or New World wines is. So it's worth mentioning they're low sugar. So if you're drinking California Chardonnay, you drink this, you might be like, oh, it's dry.
Yeah, too tart.
You know, that's just because there's no sugar in it, and you get used to not drinking sugar.
You know what this is a little bit like? There are some Alsatian wines that feel as if they're a cross between Italian and French. Or German, they will make a Riesling sometimes that's bone dry. And
that's like this.
Instead of sweet or fruity.
Right.
Goes it's better
like
with
that.
Food.
Oh, these are the wines that go with food.
But why is that? Like a Suave is better with food.
White wines, the secret to it is the acidity. So you have to have good acidity. And that's why vintage is so important, because a year that's too hot, they get flabby and don't have that brightness. It's that brightness that pairs with food, like even how Coca-Cola goes with a hamburger. You know, Coca-Cola is high acidity.
I always say
or Dr. Pepper.
It's the chewing gum effect. You know, like when you chew gum for a long time, you don't even taste the flavor anymore. And it's fatigue, mouth fatigue. And when you're eating food, you take a bite, you taste it, you take a second bite. The flavors sort of get dulled. You take a sip
your taste buds.
Your taste buds get dulled. Yeah. You take a sip of a wine, a dry wine like this, and it washes everything away. And then you taste anew again.
You know, this is always fun to me when we talk about wine like this, because there is something every day about this discussion. It's not super geeky.
No.
It's more what you might be thinking when you're at home drinking or not thinking, which is probably the best
yeah.
of all, where you just have a few sips and say, I like this, and you're off and running. Gee, this tastes good with my food, and you're off and running. On the one hand, it doesn't matter, but on the other hand, it's fun to learn. You know, Chris, you're a chef, and Mark and Alex, you're both wine guys, and so I learn every single time.
I do too.
Yeah, so yeah. much fun.
I learn from these guys all the time. It changes the way I think about the wines. You know, sometimes you put it up on a pedestal too much, I think, or at least I do. And you know, and then all of a sudden I listen to these guys and it brings it right back to earth. I'm like, no, I can just enjoy this wine with a cheeseburger, or I can have this wine with a pizza, and it really works together and it's fun.
That's how they do in Europe. Wine is not snobby. You go to the grocery store and you buy this wholesome wine and you drink it. It's on every table.
So do we think this is Huga?
Ooh,
I think this
absolutely.
Is
Huga. I agree.
This is a wine with your friends. We know from Huga that people just get together, and there's not some vast importance about every single detail being right. And just relax, enjoy the conversation, zero in on what other people are saying, hear the laughter.
Yeah.
That's it, Huga. Mm-hmm. We put the label, as we always do, on our site, foodschmooze.org. This will range from $18 to $20 a bottle, depending on your wine store. Because they can't carry everything, we always tell you to mention the distributor. We've got that name on the website, too. I want you to go to the website because we have worked so hard to put so many things on there for you, and we want you to see it. I'm teasing you a little bit with the name of the distributor, so you'll go to the site. Anyway, this vineyard, Pierrepan, P-I-E-R, like Pierre, Opan, this is the vineyard's 50th vintage.
That's
so
crazy.
Suave.
Or the winemaker's 50th.
This is 2016, by the way. Yeah, exactly. I have an idea for everybody on Facebook, bartenders and home bartenders, professional or otherwise. What do you drink at home?
Mm-hmm.
This is a question that I learned last night from a man sitting next to me who said that Hemingway, supposedly, as the story goes, Hemingway asked that question and kept a diary and would go, as he tended to do, from bar to bar to bar, asking the bartenders, what do you drink at home? And then he kept a diary and asked them, how do you make that at home? If it was in any way complicated or a
love
recipe.
To read that.
I tried to find this, but I couldn't in time for the show. There's a story that this was once published. But in any case,
very cool.
I love the question.
Yeah.
Bartenders, whether you are professional or not, what do you drink at home? I don't care how simple it is. I don't care how complex it is. Whatever you drink at home, I don't care if it's a beer. We want to know. And you do that by going to our Facebook page, Faith Middleton Foodschmooze.
I want to remind our listeners, too, that if you are not seeing our Facebook posts on your Facebook feed, go into your settings and make sure that you give us a check mark or a little star mark or whatever it is that will let Facebook know that you do want to see the Faith Middleton Foodschmooze Facebook posts in your feed first.
Because they've reconfigured Facebook a little bit, and when, you know, every time they change
they
things,
do it every 6 months.
Where did it go? Where did it go?
Get to use the word algorithm.
Yeah.
So the man sitting next to me, Mark, said last night to the bartender, what do you drink at home? And he basically said, I just put some bourbon on ice. That's about as much as I want to do. I like bourbon, and it's just easy, and it's relaxing to me. And
did he name
my favorites.
Did he name a brand that he liked?
He didn't. I'm in the process of trying to do what I consider the perfect Manhattan.
Oh, a lifelong ambition.
Yeah. I mean, I've had some fabulous Manhattans made by bartenders. I always quiz them. But I've also had some bad ones. I was just in a particular restaurant, and I saw them take out the bourbon to make my Manhattan, put it in an ice shaker with ice, and start shaking like mad. Now, first of all, I wish Anthony DeSario, our chief cocktail guy, was here because he'd be, you know,
crying.
His head would explode. That's considered something that will kind of bruise the bourbon. And so you never do that. Never shake. You know, you're supposed to be stirring it gently and, you know, with a kind of vermouth. And now even the cherries are important. I soak real cherries in brandy.
Ooh.
And then add them to my Manhattan. Ooh. When it's summertime.
Let's make our own.
Yeah.
Cherries.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
I have jars sitting in the studio.
So what's the difference, Chris, as a chef with a whole bar at your disposal, when you go home, what are you drinking?
I go in like blocks. I go in blocks where I'm drinking white wine at the end of the night, and then it's getting warmer, so I drink beer. But if it's a cocktail, I always keep a little bit of vodka at home.
In the freezer?
Yeah, I always keep it in the freezer.
But something good, though, right?
Yeah, something good, like either Grey Goose or, I don't know, Belvedere, whatever. It doesn't matter. And then there's that old New England thing called a shrub.
Oh, yeah.
And that's equal parts vinegar, sugar, and a fruit juice of some kind. And a friend of mine makes a cranberry one at home. I take the vodka, I put it in a shaker with a little bit of ice, and then I put a couple drops of this cranberry shrub in, and I shake it like mad until it's got the ice skating
ring. Too cold to hold.
And I pour it in a glass. And I do a half, because I read in a book once a martini was a shot of vodka or a shot and a half of vodka.
Mm-hmm. It's like three or four.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. Now it's...
You have to fill up the glass.
Yeah, you got to fill up the glass. No, I do the real martini, so it's an ounce, maybe an ounce and a half of vodka, a little bit. And then I sit on the couch, and I just go into a peaceful place and drink my one little martini.
A twist or? Mm-hmm.
No, nothing. I don't do anything.
Do you like the flavor of the martini you make when you make it?
Yeah, I do.
So that's a great thing. I, too, would say that it moves for me. Right now, I'm quite obsessed with perfecting the Manhattan so that I can give that as a gift to my guests as soon as I feel like I've really got it down.
Are you using special ice?
No, I don't do that.
Glacier ice?
No.
What, do you buy
it? The large balls
where you can boil water?
I saw online where this was a YouTube video, and the bartender literally took 15 minutes to carve the ice.
Yeah, I saw that.
And carve the ice for his drink.
His drinks are so small.
He's not busy enough.
No, he's got way too much time.
Mark, how about you? What do you have at home?
Every night.
You have access to a
couple of martinis.
No, my go-to to relax at the end of the day is always a nice bourbon on the rocks. But my cocktail of choice is definitely a gin and tonic. And I love to just give it a little more depth and a little more substance. I mean, lime, gin, and tonic is excellent by itself.
Mm.
But when you take like maybe a little bit of elderflower liqueur and give it a touch of that, you know, a little splash of that, maybe a little bit of rhubarb that's fresh for the spring.
Right.
And then put that in a blender and put a little bit of that in there.
Uh-huh.
I love the shrub that you're talking about. I mean, I could totally see.
I'll get you a bottle. A
couple drops of that into your gin and tonic and just give it another dimension. Mm.
So you hear what we're getting into here. And we'd love to hear from you on Facebook, especially bartenders. What is it that you drink when you go home? As simple as it is or as complex as it is, we don't care. It's just a question supposedly that Hemingway asked and researched, if it's true.
I have a question about bourbon, though, because I'm not a bourbon drinker. Is it popular now because there's cocktails, or are people just drinking it like Mark said, where he just puts it on
ice?
Out
of the bottle.
No. No, where he just pours a little over ice. Is it a cocktail craze that have elevated it, or is it just...
I can't begin to say. It's retro. I understand how this happened.
I think it's
a
little bit of everything.
Yeah.
You know?
PR, sometimes it's just... I mean, olive oil really started as a health drink. because of PR people who started to market it that way.
Yeah.
And then that took off. And then Parmigiano Reggiano, the same thing happened. A brilliant PR woman took that account from Italy, you know, the best Parmigiano makers, and boom, that took off.
So maybe that's it with bourbon, right?
Our generation looks at like our grandparents or great-grandparents at what they used to do, and it seems like it's like that circle. People are looking back, like I remember my grandfather drinking scotch. You know, and people are thinking it's cool, and it's homage to their grandparents.
Yeah, that could be some of it too. Yeah,
memory, and that's hygge.
Tying it all together.
If you're just joining us and you think, "What in the world are they talking about? What are they saying, hygge?" I would encourage you to go online and listen to the beginning of our show, because we featured a book that I, in particular, adore. And it's about this philosophy and way of living that the Danes popularized, and they call it hygge. a spirit of coziness and loving intimacy and connecting with people and getting a real sense of the idea that more of things doesn't make you happier, but just the appreciation of what is there makes you happy. Bear in mind that the Danes, you pay a lot in taxes, but everything is covered for them. You know,
they're happy,
it's
right?
Like child care. Yeah, they're happy. They can think about happiness inside because so much is done.
I can too.
This was a great lesson to me. Anyway, love you all.
I'm happy when we're in the room together.
I know.
That's hookah.
Me too. Yeah. I love them. Okay, we're on WNPR Thursdays at 3 and 9. And Saturdays at noon, weekdays, listen for my 60-second food schmoozes, and never eat more than you can lift. That's a hygge. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton. Hey, thanks for listening to the podcast on your schedule. And when you need a little more party in your life, we're here online at foodschmooze.org. And we hope you'll talk with us on Facebook. We're at Faith Middleton Food Schmooze.